Welcome to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone, the podcast where we highlight nonprofit leaders in the trenches who share the strategies and tactics they use to grow their organizations and make a difference each day. Let's dive in.
Hi, I'm Joe Whipple, and you are listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show. Alyssa Bowlby is here with me today. Alyssa is a co-founder and executive director of the Ileana Leadership Foundation. Alyssa, thanks for joining me. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. So as is tradition around here, I like to start things off with a fun or exciting, maybe even nerve-wracking story from your work as a nonprofit professional. And whether that is, a fun story from camp or administratively, go for it. Whatever you have for me.
Okay. The panoply of stories that I feel like would answer this is wide ranging. The one that I'm thinking about right now was 2016. We had a student who, so this is really about working with students and sort of positive behavior modeling. So positive behavior modeling, just to give you a little bit of context, is the idea that instead of telling a kid what they did wrong or what they can't do, like if I say, don't drink milk, you're like, oh, okay, well, I can't drink milk, but what can I drink? So if I'm like, don't talk, you're sort of like, well, can I whisper? Can I whistle? Should I just sit here and sleep? Should I be silent with my eyes open? You know, it is significantly easier to give a kid an instruction for what to do than what not to do. And it's also nicer to give a compliment than to be punitive. So we had this girl, I'm going to call her Jay, and she had a huge personality. She was one of those people, and I'm sure you've met people like this, when you walk into a room, just kind of all eyes go to her. And I don't think it was a thing that she particularly cultivated. It was just kind of her natural charisma, her natural energy. She was just a leader, a person that people looked to set the tone for what was appropriate in a given situation. And so Jay liked to talk, as many 16-year-old students do. And she would frequently be talking like when we were trying to give instructions as a camp, you know, we'd rally everybody around and the teachers would make announcements or the program person would be like, okay, first we're going to go here, then we're going to go there. And so she was always talking. And so this happened not just when we were trying to do stuff for camp, but also when we were trying to do stuff in classes, like she would just kind of always be talking. And so we talked to her about it over and over again. And we said, you know, it really is distracting. It's really frustrating. Like, could you not talk? And so it kept happening. And I remember there was this one morning and we were like 2.5 weeks into camp and everybody was super tired and she was talking again. And I was standing near her. So I went over to her and part of me wanted to just scream, stop talking, because, you know, I'd asked her so many times, but instead I put my hand on her shoulder and I was like, hey, when you talk, when Sarah's talking, it's really hard for everybody else to listen to what Sarah's doing. Because I don't know if you know this about yourself, but you have a really big personality. You're like kind of a person that people look to that sets the tone for what's going on in a group. And when you're talking, it really pulls focus from what Sarah's doing. So I know you don't mean to do this, and I know you respect Sarah, and I know you're not trying to be disrespectful. So for right now, can you just not say anything? And by being quiet, you're actually setting the tone. You're like kind of my counselor in training, right? You're helping me show other people what the right thing is to do. And so Jay was like, her attitude completely changed. And she was like, okay. And then that counselor in training thing stuck, because counselor in training is a title that we have for some of our staff members. And so she started to see herself as a person who is helping out the staff by setting a good example. And so then it became a thing. Like she'd kind of sidle up to me or whoever was in charge at that moment and be like, oh, you know, what tone do you want me to set? Like, what do you want me to do? Because she understood that like that was her role.
And that is too funny. That's amazing.
At the end of camp, they usually give me some kind of present at the end of camp. And that particular year, they gave me a poster board that all the kids had signed with a picture of session two kids in it. And on that poster board, which I had in my bedroom and just brought into the office today, and I read it like every morning when I wake up, she signed it and she said, I love you. Thank you for everything you did. I'll never forget you. You're CITIT, your counselor in training. And like she has continued to stay in touch with me and always references that and says Ileana was the best time of her life. and that it really like changed something in her. And like that, I don't know, it's not, maybe it doesn't count as nerve-wracking, but it was one of those moments where you turn something that's so frustrating into a thing that actually grows and does something great on its own. And in retrospect, you look back and you're like, wow, that was amazing. But at the time, you're just kind of trying to hold it together and like do your best in the moment, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I actually think that story is super insightful to you as a person. And it makes me think that takes an impressive set of skills to handle a situation like that from your perspective, or to understand, to not get frustrated and understand how to effectively communicate something to a student, to a kid who is, you know, the leader in the room, who kind of sets the tone for everyone else. Does that come naturally to you, or was it learned through your work with kids? You know, how does that come along?
Well, that's very nice of you. Thank you. I actually can take no credit for it. It all is our mental wellness director, Leanne Liu, who has a couple masters from UPenn and is now getting her doctorate at Lehigh and in counseling and working specifically with teens from low SES backgrounds. So it is her framing this positive behavior model. And she's not only one of our employees. I mean, she's also a good friend. And so we talk about what is the best way to react in these moments. And I should be clear that there were totally times before Leanne and I did this and sort of dove into this positive behavior modeling when I would have just been like, stop talking, you know?
And, of course.
And, you know, sometimes you're in the supermarket and you see parents who are just clearly so frustrated with their kids. And you like understand because you've been in that situation too, when this is the nth time that the child has done the same thing. How many times do you have to have the conversation about it? But I always get a little sad when I see the parent explode or yell or, you know, do something that feels punitive, because they're just at their wit's end. Because like, there's another way to do it. But I also understand, like, you know, I'm not a parent. So I have sort of there's a certain period of time that I'm committed to being that person. And it's different when you're a parent, because you're like that, you know, 24/7, like your whole life. So I try to be empathetic in those moments as well. But I wish more people took the positive behavior modeling as their approach.
I was going to say, so I didn't grow up attending camp at all. And as I got older, I was never one to then be a mentor or a camp counselor or anything to that nature. Is it common in camps across the board to work on positive behavior modeling and to train the employees and the staff? Or is this just kind of a really cool thing that, you know, Ileana does because of who your team is?
I don't know. I haven't been to any camp except ours, but I think it has to do with being educated in like being a mental health professional. So I think if you are a mental health professional, or if you have mental health professionals on your team, you're more likely to think about these things and think about it from that perspective. But behavior management is a really sort of big thing when you're working with kids who are frequently in schools where they're treated a little bit like prisoners. And so we want to make sure that their experience is different and is full of love. Like I use the word love a lot in a way that I think a lot of like camp administrators or, you know, people who are professional, you don't really say love all the time. But I tell my kids I love them all the time because I want them to know that I love them. And I don't know, it's hard for me to say what the net effect of that is, because I would have had to sort of Robert Frost, like, have taken the opposite road and then be able to look back at my life with that and without that.
Nobody wants to A/B test love.
Right.
that doesn't sound like a great idea.
Right. But it feels like that's part of the reason why we get the results that we get. Because if you think about what we do, right, it's a 3-week summer camp experience. And so many of the kids are like, oh my God, Ileana changed my life. This is an experience I'll remember forever. And if you see a kid 3 years later, the kid like makes a beeline to you. Like, I cannot enter a room where my children are without them like running to me, saying my name and like getting a huge hug and us being like, I love you. Tell me everything. What's going on? You know? And I think that that's I think that that's a large part of what we do. And it's not limited to just me. Like, you know, I encourage the staff, you know, be yourself. Don't say a thing that doesn't feel authentic to you. But if you want to show them that you love them, like, that's totally okay. And I feel like there's a lot of space for that to happen. I think it is a great thing when that happens.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I would agree. Although my experience is probably even lesser than that of probably anybody that I talk to when it comes to being in a mentor role or involved in a camp like that. So Alyssa, we've hinted a little bit at what Ileana is. You just mentioned it's a 3-week summer camp. For our listeners, I want to give them a more clear understanding of just what it is that the Ileana Leadership Foundation is all about and how you are helping kids each summer.
Okay. So I should say a couple of things. First, the Ileana Leadership Foundation is an umbrella organization that operates sort of the crown jewel in its setting, the Ileana Leadership Academy, which is the summer SAT camp of which I have made mention. So in this 3-week period, we do SAT score improvement to the tune of 130, 180 points in a 3-week period, which is like quite a lot. We get to the 120 hour mark with our kids. And over the 80 hour mark is really where you have to go if you want to have substantial improvement, like score improvement that's worth talking about, like 100 points or more. Besides the SAT score improvement, it's also a traditional summer camp experience. So frequently our kids have had to take on adult responsibilities from a really young age, whether it's childcare or, you know, helping out a sick parent or a sick relative. They just frequently have to take a lot of responsibilities on that are responsibilities that I wish a young person wouldn't ever have to have. So they've had to grow up a lot earlier. And I think a traditional summer camp experience is really nice. It's like a time that you can be a kid again and you can kind of, you know, let your hair down and just be yourself and do a thing that's fun and you don't have any responsibilities. And I have stories about that too. You know, kids who've come to us and talked about how different it is to be able to just be a kid. Besides the SAT summer camp experience, we're also honing their critical thinking skills through a curriculum, which starts out as design thinking and sort of funnels down to an entrepreneurship and culminates in a one-day startup fair where we bring in real-life entrepreneurs to talk to the kids about their ideas and give them feedback from a macro and a micro perspective on like the business plans that they've hatched over this 3-week period, while at the same time, you know, they're prepping for the SATs. And so the kids really enjoy meeting these people who have faced real world challenges of thinking outside the box, because at its best and at its core, that's what entrepreneurship is. So we've got the critical thinking, we've got the SAT score improvement. We've also got the traditional summer camp experience. And I think most of all, what we do is a college access experience. So because you're on a college campus, you know, a small liberal arts college, and it's traditional in all the ways that you imagine, like a quad, a fire pit. So we have campfire under the stars on Saturday nights and make s'mores. But also the kids are taking classes in college classrooms. They're eating in a college dining hall. They're sleeping in college dorms. They're walking around a college campus. And so they really feel like they've had the experience of being in college. And if you will permit me, I will tell a short story about Leja, who came to us in 2013. And it was the first year we'd ever run camp. So, you know, we knew a lot less well what we were doing than we do now. Leja was super homesick. And she was like, basically got off the bus and was like, I'm gonna go home. Like, I can't do this. I'm gonna call my mom. She's gonna come pick me up. So Leja's mom and I got on the phone and we were like, okay, Operation Leja Stay at Camp. And so long story short, Operation Leja Stay at Camp worked. On the last night, I let the kids stay up all night. And so I made her lemon tea and the two of us sat in the kitchen and talked till all hours, you know, till it was time to get up and go to breakfast. So then, you know, she goes home on the bus. And she's crying. She's so sad to leave this girl who didn't even want to stay. She was so sad to leave. And then I ran into her in her school. Fast forward to like 6 months later, she happened to be the valedictorian of her school, AOIT, Academy of something technology in Brooklyn. We can look that up later. And I said to her, oh, so where are you going to college? She's like, oh, I'm going to Syracuse. And I was like, Leja, that's like 4 hours away. Like, are you going to be okay? And she puts her hand on her hip and she's like, please, I've got 3.5 weeks of college under my belt. I'm going to be fine. And I was like, okay, Leja. Right. And true to form, Leja graduated on time from Syracuse and she's now getting her master's in Columbia here in the city.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So like, that's the purpose of the College Access experience. And like, when you have a moment like that with a kid, and you know, I have a lot of other moments that are sort of less dramatic and make for less good stories, but where kids tell me, oh, I realized that I could do this on my own. I realized that, you know, my family wasn't gonna die because I wasn't there. And a lot of times it's for the family too, to recognize that like, my baby can go out of the house and it's gonna be all right. And the dorm experience is really different from knowing that you can't go without, you can't go outside a certain X block radius of your home, you know? So it just opens up a lot of doors. Because for instance, if you live in Brooklyn and you never go into Manhattan because it's just not a thing you do, I want to give you the option to broaden your horizons so that you can go to Manhattan, you can go to Boston, you can go to Philadelphia, go wherever you want, try it out, you know?
So as much as this is an experience to, you know, work on, you know, SAT scores or ACT scores or, you know, college prep, it is also an experience to get out of the house, see what the next step in life might be like, and kind of, you know, in what is still probably a comfortable setting, get a taste of what it's like to be out of the house, which is really maybe even more valuable for some of these kids.
Yeah. And also remember that if you're first in your family to go to college, or, you know, first in your family to venture outside sort of a given known safe area, like we've had kids who've gotten accepted to places like Boston University and turned it down because they were like, oh, I don't know how to get there. And we were like, wait, what? Like, we would have figured that out. Or they'll be like, oh, I don't have pajamas to wear at night. And we're like, what? Like, that's such an easy problem to solve. So I think a lot of what we're doing is figuring out what are the easy problems that maybe don't feel easy to the kid inside. But like for us, we're like, oh, that? You know, I remember we had one kid one year who we realized that he wasn't really understanding what was going on in class, but we also knew he was really smart. And we're like, why is this happening? And so Leanne, who is his teacher, she's like pretty perceptive. She noticed he's squinting a lot. She was like, Jasir, can you see the board? He's like, no. She was like, can you come closer? He's like, it won't make a difference. I still won't be able to see the board. She goes, Jasir, do you have glasses? He's like, yes. She's like, are they in your dorm room? He's like, no. Where are they? I broke them. Oh, are you going to get new ones? I don't know. You know, my mom doesn't really have money to buy them right now. So Leanne was like, okay, Jasir can't see the board. I was like, easy problem to solve. $30 buys him glasses. Let's like figure out what his prescription is, send away to Warby Parker. And before camp was over, he had glasses. You know, it's also like paying attention to the little things and listening and figuring out what those are so that you can solve a problem.
Yeah, for sure. So when I was first prepping for this episode and looking into your organization and what you do, I would have never imagined some of these specific details. And it adds to a really interesting emotional element that nonprofits oftentimes leverage to connect with, you know, their audience, to connect with donors, to connect with volunteers. And you have kind of an interesting funding model in that you have another for-profit camp that helps fund the Ileana Summer Camp that you guys host. And I guess what I'm interested in learning a little more about is, do you leverage some of these stories that you just told to help with your fundraising process, to help increase your audience or increase your supporters?
That is a great question. And we're actually in a period of transition where we're sort of reorganizing where all the funding comes from, because we didn't have SSA before 2018. You know, we're sort of figuring out how that fits into the pie. And we actually hired a new chief growth officer, Nick Hudson, who started at the beginning of 2020, just in January this past year, who's helping us sort of figure out how to best tell our story. So I'm very good at talking to schools and talking about SAT score increases, right? Because I've been teaching and tutoring the SAT since 2006. Like, you want to talk about college access? Like, I got that. But in terms of, you know, turning that into something that funders are interested in, that's a thing that I know less about, but Nick is super good at all of those things. And we're so excited to have him.
That's amazing. And I know Nick is I think, in the room with you. So if at any point, Nick, you feel like you want to chime in and let us know about some of the specific tactics or strategies from a marketing and a storytelling perspective that you guys are working on, the floor is yours. But I know I just threw a curveball at you. You might not have been expecting to talk at all.
Happy to hopefully hit the curveball out of the park. So from a storytelling perspective, it's kind of cool that you use that terminology, because we're constantly thinking about, you know, we have these great stories that outside of our own staff and our own supporters, you know, in a very small circle, we don't really tell that often. And part of that is because of privacy reasons. We're dealing with students who are minors, so we can't just go and tell all their stories without them agreeing to it. And we want to be really sensitive. You know, these are students who often have been through a lot of stuff, you know, whether it's personal or family, and are dealing with a lot of issues that most high school students in America are not really facing. You know, we talk about underserved populations and in urban centers. So we're always really sensitive to that. And for us, you know, it's something that we debate a lot of how often we want to go and tell, you know, just hear a story versus, you know, a kind of more basic outline of what we do. But obviously we know this, like any nonprofit, stories are what sells and stories are what people really connect to. So, and connect with. So what we're trying to do more of is really include the students in those storytelling sessions. You know, even just doing stuff like open mics or telling them, here's an idea that we have. We are really thinking about doing, you know, community-led videos where we let you guys just kind of take the mic and tell why you think Ileana has been important in your life, rather than us have, you know, a story fed to you or ask you to read a script, which is not going to be effective. And so one thing that we're really looking to do, especially in 2020, is open the floor up to our students and let them kind of run with it. Especially because so many of our kids are so creative and so dynamic and so open to talking about their own stories, way more than we're probably even, you know, aware of. Because I think everybody deep down wants to share their story, especially when it's a successful one. So we're really excited to start to debut some of those a little bit more often and share those with supporters in the just general nonprofit community, because, you know, our partnerships are so important to us, because that's how we're able to reach more schools, that's how we're able to reach more students. And so, you know, our mission is very, very singular. It's let's improve the test scores of students who are rising seniors from underserved areas. It's pretty specific. Obviously, like you heard, it's kind of a Trojan horse, and we do all this other great stuff too. But the really, really good thing about having a mission that is so focused is we do open up ourselves to a lot of partnerships with nonprofits that have more generalized missions, like mentoring and like career advising. So we're definitely looking to expand those partnerships as well.
It's interesting also that Nick used the word Trojan horse. I think that that's, especially now that I'm starting to talk to more people, I'm realizing how much that is true. Because when we go in to talk to partner organizations like schools, guidance counselors, administrators, whatever, we're focusing on SAT scores. We're like, hey, we're going to raise your SAT scores. And when we talk to parents, when we talk to kids, we're like, hey, the SAT is important. One of the things that I do when I'm making my presentations is I take them to collegescorecard.ed.gov, bigfuture.collegeboard.org, collegeresults.org, so that you see how much money you make from a certain college the year after you graduate. Because what I'm trying to say is your SAT scores are tied directly to money. If you would like to make more money, you need to get a high SAT score. And generally, after I've taken them through like sort of the general sense of like, this is how much money you make if you go to Harvard, and this is how much money you make if you go to another school, which is less selective, kids are like, okay, I'm on board, Harvard. How do I raise my SATs again? But one thing that I'm also, that we have realized over time as we get feedback from our partner organizations, is that the biggest thing that we really do is not move SAT scores, but change their level of academic orientation. We turn students into kids who are determined, who feel like they have power, like they have the ability to do something. Somebody asked me what the best compliment we've ever gotten from a student or parent is. And I found myself reading this email from a parent who said, you know, you raised my daughter's scores 250 points, and now she's going to get into her dream school. But she's always thought that she was bad at math. And now she knows she isn't. She's getting an A+ in AP Calc and AP Stat, which somehow she managed to take at the same time. Okay. And she said, now she knows she's really good at math. And I was like, yes, because I'm glad that she's going to her dream school. I'm glad that her SAT scores went up. But like in terms of really moving the needle inside a person, if I can make you after 3 weeks walk away with confidence that you can do something, then like that trumps all that other stuff, you know, because like the confidence is going to get you to over the next hurdle. The SATs are like a hurdle. So great, you've cleared that hurdle. But I would like you to clear all of the hurdles that come. And that's a huge part of the reason why we rely so heavily on critical thinking skills, because there are statistics that tie critical thinking skills to college persistence, college graduation, salary after graduation, and happiness in life. So since what we do is through the lens of critical thinking skills, it's a lot more about moving the needle in a long-term sense in a way that I can never come up with a statistical score game to demonstrate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. And through what you just said, and also through Nick sharing a little insight into some tactics that are going to be undergoing in 2020, one of the biggest things I've noticed from talking with both of you so far is that your answers to some of these questions, they're both so passionate about the kids and what really is best for them. Whether it is paying so close attention to figuring out like you need a new set of glasses, or we're going to get you into your dream school, we're going to change your perception of yourself with how good you are at math. And when I ask the question to Nick a little bit ago, and I brought up, you know, your funding model and the storytelling side, and if you're trying to leverage that to connect with donors and partners, his answer had nothing to do with funding. And I think that is actually really special, because it shows that you guys are so passionate and you have seen success in what you're doing. And you know that by just telling your story, by increasing your partnerships, like everything will fall into place. And I think that's really, really cool.
Thank you. That is the hope.
Well, I think big things are coming in 2020.
Awesome. Yeah, I would love that.
So as we wrap up here, Alyssa, I want to hit you with some rapid fire questions about yourself. And then we'll take off here. Starting with, if you could describe yourself in one word, what would it be?
Energetic.
Energetic. You know, I've gotten that vibe. And just to share this to the listeners, it's something that you had mentioned before, and I've been trying to figure out how to work it in, but I'm just going to plug it in. Alyssa was a professional opera singer before embarking on this career path in the nonprofit world. And when she got the message about the Ileana Leadership Foundation, you were actually in Germany, you know, trying to make it as a, and I say trying to make it, I think anything that involves a career in the professional arts is so hard in today's modern world.
Yeah.
I think, and my sister is a professional artist, and yeah, so I kind of understand from that perspective, just because I have somebody close in the family. But you were in Germany doing this, doing opera, and then you moved back from the States. That's super cool. I just wanted to plug that because I think it's so interesting. Can you talk a little bit about that real quick?
Yes, absolutely. And as I said this to the videographer the other night, we were talking, and I said, you know, because it was his birthday, and so we went out. Our videographer is from Turkey, and he happened to be here in the United States on his birthday. So, of course, we took him out for his birthday. And we had told the people at the restaurant that it was for his birthday. So, you know, they wished him a happy birthday. But then they came out at the end with ice cream and a candle. And so I looked at him, and I'm like, do you want me to sing happy birthday? And the other friend I was with was like, oh God, no. Because, you know, he knows that whenever an opera singer sings happy birthday, like the entire restaurant's gonna shut.
And, you know, was it recorded?
No. As a person who is a professional opera singer, like I can tell you how many times I shut a restaurant down because it was somebody's birthday. And it's not like, you know, malicious or like, look at me, but you know, I can make a lot of noise with my vocal cords more than most people. So Yeah. So Yunesh, our videographer, was like, yeah, I want you to sing. And I was like, okay, here it comes. And so, of course, the whole restaurant went quiet. But to answer your question, yes, I was a professional opera singer for 13 years. And the way that people often ask me, you know, how did you get into the nonprofit world, or how did you come to serve the population that you work with? Like, is it a thing that you always wanted to do? And I'm like, no, I thought I was going to be a professional opera singer. And when you're an opera singer, I did my taxes 1 year and I found that I had made $120 that year from singing. And I had spent $25,000 on lessons and coachings and audition prep and, you know, getting to auditions, travel, all that stuff. And I was like, wow, this is definitely a non-sustainable situation. So
yeah, that's a little lopsided.
Right. So when you're an opera singer, you have to have a side job. My side jobs were being an IEP tutor in the Bronx and also teaching SATs and ACTs on Long Island. So basically during the day, I'd work in the Bronx and work with kids who had a lot of learning challenges and a diverse palette of learning challenges. When school ended about 3, I'd get in my car, drive as fast as I could to Long Island, and then work with kids, prepping them for the ACTs and SATs who were of a significantly higher socioeconomic status. So I was seeing both of these things in stark relief all the time. And I also thought teaching the SATs was kind of fun, which whenever I tell people, they're just like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, well, SATs can be fun too. And also for me, part of the challenge is making other people think that they're as much fun as I do. So grownups are allowed to take the SAT 3 times a year, and I take it the 3 times a year that grownups are allowed to take it. And, when people find that out, they're like, what? You volunteer to take the SATs? And I always think that the SATs are a thing that, like, are a little smarter than I am. And so it's sort of like my nemesis, you know, and I'm always following him and seeing if I can beat him this time. And so I got my perfect math score. And so I was like, okay, I beat the SAT, go me. And then, but I only have a 790 on the verbal. So I've done a perfect reading and a perfect writing, but not at the same time. But for all you listeners out there who are shaking your fingers at me, I'm taking it again in March and I'm gunning for my perfect 1600. So
I believe in you.
Thank you.
You can do it.
Thank you. I don't know if I answered your question at all. Hard to say.
Yes, you did. I just wanted some insight into your background because I think it's so fun. I also totally just looked you up on YouTube and I will be listening later.
Yes, you can. Alyssa Heisler-Bowley. That's how you can find me.
So much fun. So last question here for you. What would you say you appreciate now that you didn't necessarily appreciate 10 years ago?
I'm going to give a really boring answer. I think process and bureaucracy. Because when I was young, And I think all of us are motivated by the desire to change the world in the best way, right? And so you hear of a good idea and you're like, okay, let's move on that. But as you get older, you recognize that sometimes it takes a little bit of time. You need to think about it. And if you want to do anything that's really big, it has to be systemic, which means it has to be process-oriented, which means you can incorporate more people, but then they have to kind of know what they're doing, which means that the process has to stand on its own. You know, so if you have 5 people who are all working really hard towards the same goal that you are, they have to be self-directed. And in order to be truly self-directed, they have to understand what their job is, what other people's jobs are, what the boundaries of those are, the limits, and what is a process so that they know when they're doing something, like when to press go or when to stop or when to get more information. So that is probably the worst and most boring answer I've ever given, but I think it's also true.
Yeah, I agree. I think I don't agree that it was the most boring answer. I agree with that. I think processes in place for training, consistent training to get everybody on the same page is incredibly important to the overall success of large organizations.
Yeah. And if we want to do something that's really big, we have to have the sort of operation has to be a certain size. And so, you know, I'm sort of Six Sigma, just in time mentality. Like, we just do the thing that we need and we have the skinniest, like, most nimble operation possible. But if you want to do something really big, it just has to accumulate a little bit of bulk so that it can stand on its own.
Yep, for sure. So, Alyssa, where can people either connect with you online, or where can they learn more about Ileana or what your organization is up to?
Ooh, great question. So you can look us up online at ileana.org. Ileana is spelled Y-L. E as in Edward, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, A.org. You can also, if you're interested in summer camp for this year for your student and you want to raise his or their SAT scores, check us out at SocraticSummerAcademy.com. And if you want to follow us on social media, we're on Facebook, Socratic Summer Academy and Ileana Leadership. And we're also on Twitter. And my goodness, Nick, where else are we?
It's all, I mean, pretty much all the big ones, but
yeah.
Perfect. Excellent. And I'm not going to lie. I'm so proud of myself. I think I nailed the pronunciation of Ileana throughout this entire episode. That was something I was worried about.
And also, you know what else I should promote? Alyssa, the SAT expert. So that's a thing that we're starting. Our videographer actually said, Alyssa, it seems like you know a lot about the SATs. He had made a couple videos of me and I was like, yes, that's true.
It helps that you take it every year.
Right? Yes. And he was like, I think you're kind of an expert. And I was like, yeah, okay. And he was like, what if we made you Alyssa the SAT expert? And I was like, okay. So we've started doing a series of videos, Alyssa the SAT expert, where I dive pretty deeply into college access, SAT tips and tricks. And we're hoping to sort of establish a following of folks who are interested in the SAT and who want to do well on it and don't think it's boring.
Excellent. Well, Alyssa, thank you so much. I really enjoyed our conversation today, learning more about what Ileana does and just getting to learn more about you. I had a ton of fun. I hope to stay in touch.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much. That's so nice of you.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or giving us a rating or review on your favorite podcast network. We appreciate your support. Until next time.